Good morning. It's good to be with you this morning. I didn't expect to get the opportunity to be with you so quickly. And when Mark called me, it was, yeah, good to be here. Good to be here. We continue to remember Thorn Creek in our prayers, in our heart, that you who are here will look around and be delighted at the goodness of God that on another Sunday morning you have gathered together, that you are here present. My wife and I are blessed, and I continue to share with Mark and others some of those blessings that are in our lives, and if you need a few more details, ask them about what is going on in our life in Michigan. But we say it's a delight, and I have to tell you, good to see former students up here taking part, hearing some of the things that they're doing. Carly, Nicole, and others, a blessing and a joy. And now I invite you to come to the Word of God. There is a plan. Did you know it? Do you know the plan? Isaiah chapter 5. I'm not going to read it. I don't know if it's all up there on the screen. I'm only going to read the first 7 verses this morning. That's part of your homework for the rest of the day, is to read all of chapter 5. And for you STAR students, you need to read chapters 1 through 4 as well. So before you do anything else, after the service this afternoon, after your lunch and nap, you have homework. So Isaiah chapter 4, 1 through 4, and the rest of chapter 5. But this morning we're going to read verses 1 through 7. As the beginning of our lesson. Hear now the word of the Lord. I will sing for the one I love, a song about his vineyard. My loved one had a vineyard on a fertile hillside. He dug it up and cleared it of stones and planted it with the choicest vines. He built a watchtower in it and cut out a wine press as well. Then he looked for a crop of good grapes, but it yielded only bad fruit. Now, you dwellers in Jerusalem and people of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. What more could have been done for my vineyard than I have done for it? When I looked for good grapes, why did it yield only bad? Now I will tell you what I'm going to do to my vineyard. I will take away its hedge, and it will be destroyed. I will break down its walls, and it will be trampled. I will make it a wasteland, neither pruned nor cultivated, and briars and thorns will grow there. I will command the clouds not to rain on it. The vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the nation of Israel, and the people of Judah are the vines he delights in. And he looked for justice, but saw bloodshed. For righteousness, but heard cries of distress. Thus far the reading of the word of the Lord. I will make reference to the rest of Isaiah chapter 5 later, and if you want to have out a pew Bible, if you want to read it and you like to read it, I invite you to have that open and ready to go later in the service. Yesterday was an interesting day, wasn't it? It was rather indicative of the kind of world we live in. Did you notice? A physical world and a non-material world. Did you pay attention? Oh, you caught the material world, right? All the cute little bunnies and princesses and lumberjacks dancing around in the parking lots and maybe even on your doorstep. A physical world that we easily see and identify. But did you catch the non-material world that was out there? That was on display? Maybe not so boldly stated, but certainly for us to see if we had eyes to see. Eyes of the heart. A non-material world shown to us in the ghosts and the goblins, the witches and the skeletons, the blood and the gore, the spooks and the devils and the demons. Did you notice? Did you catch it? You see, it's a reminder of the world we live in. And there was on display a question that one could ask. I saw the evil. I saw the non-material. Was I reminded of the God who stands there also? The holy reality that was part of yesterday as well? You see, it should have been or could have been a reminder to us of a struggle that happened 500 years ago, well, 503 years ago to be exact. An unknown monk who nails something to a door, maybe, but at least asked some questions that challenged the world to say, here is the God of power, here is the God of reality, do you know him? You see, Martin Luther was asking a question. Do you know Christ alone as your hope in life and in death? Are you waking up to the call of holy living that he is bringing to you? So let me begin by saying, Happy Reformation Day, or day late, 503 years late. So maybe you're asking yourself, wait a minute, what does this all have to do with Isaiah chapter 5, ancient Israel, Christ on the cross, my life today, and the plan? Well, let me try to stitch it together in this way. This morning, I'd like to talk a little bit about Isaiah 5 with these three points in mind. First, there is a plan. We're going to look at verses 1 through 7 and ask that question. Where is the plan? Two, there is a plan B. There is a plan B. And three, God has a purpose behind his plan. Three things for you to look for this morning. I'm going to read verses 1 and 2 again. Listen. Do you catch the plan? I will sing for the one I love, a song about his vineyard. My loved one had a vineyard on a fertile hillside. He dug it up, cleared it of stones, planted it with the choicest vines. He built a tower, a watchtower in it, and cut out a winepress as well. Then he looked for a crop of good grapes, but it yielded only bad fruit. Point one, there is a plan. Maybe that's too simple. Maybe you say, wait a minute, that's pretty obvious, isn't it? But I don't want us to miss this, that here in Isaiah chapter 5, we have outlined for us a plan. There is one. There's always a plan. Always has been. Now, the plan, it doesn't come, you didn't see it there, it didn't say, here's a plan for a vineyard. But watch how the plan unfolds in front of us. And we want to see, you see, there is a God who says, I have a plan. And Isaiah calls him my loved one. Don't miss it. God is the loved one. And he carried out work according to his plan. And what I want us to see is that we can look at the activity, and behind the activity, we see the plan. Walk with me through that again. Notice the plan. Oh, notice the work and then the plan, right? One, he identifies fertile land, right? There's some fertile land, and he says, we're going to plant here, not here. Two, he begins to dig up and till the soil. There's hard labor here. He clears out the stones. Now, Isaiah's talking to Israel. Don't miss that. He's giving this story to those people whose hearts are hard toward God, and they would have looked around and seen all the stones in Israel. They got it. They know what's going on here, the hard labor in clearing stone. Then he went shopping. You go shopping? He looks in the nursery and says, no, not this one. No, not that one. No, these aren't going to. Oh, here are the vines I want. The best ones. And then what? He plants them in orderly rows. There are further preparations. Do you see it? There's a watchtower. Why? To protect the plants, the vineyard. There's a wine press in anticipation of crop. And then if you look at verses 5 and 6, there's further action. We find out he builds a hedge. And he builds a wall. He has made plans to prune and cultivate the vines. Have you ever planned a garden? When did you begin to plant? When did you begin to harvest? When did you prepare for harvest? The day harvest was supposed to happen? No. If you've ever planned a garden, you began in the snow of January, didn't you? And you got the Burpee seed catalog, and you said, hey, we're going to order this and this, and I want to, and then you maybe drew a sketch out and said, I want to plant the rutabagas here, and I want to plant the beets here. You got rutabagas and beets? Whatever you planned, you laid it out well. And you did all the things that the gardener does here. You see the plan? There is one. Isaiah is talking about a vineyard, but he's talking about God. And he said, God had a plan, Israel. And it was for you. And it was good. You see, do you catch the echoes of another garden? Where a God brought to life all that lives and said, it is very good. And his plan was to carry out for his glory. Now, by contrast, what do we see here? Let's contrast Isaiah 5 to what you see in the world. Is the world operating by a plan? You heard a little bit of it this morning in our prayers. What's the world look like to you right now? Is orderly and planned words that you would use? Or is chaotic and desperate? Do I need to make the list? I see all your masks. Hello? Have you paid attention? Do you make lists? Earthquakes in Turkey, hurricanes on the coasts, wildfires, swine flus, devastated crops, persecutions in India. Need I go on? Do we all catch the world as we see it? How about if I mention to you names like Richard Dawkins, Stephen Hawking? Do they have a plan? Did they have a plan? You know what they said? I summarize very crudely what they said. They said, all the world is an accident. The universe is an oops. There's no plan. There's no reason. There's no purpose. Do you see it? Isaiah 5 says, God had a plan, planted a vineyard with a purpose and expectation. Many in the world that I have spoken with and have read about Say, all that matters is matter. All that matters is matter. We live and we die. No reason why. I spoke with someone, who was it this morning, in the very back, who had a Muslim come to their home to be fed and entertained and to build relationship. And this person said, we get 60 years and we die. Is there a plan? Let me come to my point then again. There's always a plan. And maybe we understand this language. There's a plan A, but there's also a plan B. Now watch, let's move on to this. What is plan B? Take a look if you have your Bibles open, but we'll be talking through verses 8 through 30. And I want to talk about plan B, an alternate to the plan we see in verses 1 and 2. I would encourage you to read over Isaiah 5 and the chapters that come before it. Because I believe what you see in verses 8 through 30 is the human plan, plan B, the plan in opposition to God's plan in action. Again, I think you're going to deduce, you should be able to see what a human plan is by the things that Isaiah talks about. Now, Isaiah is talking to Israel, but he's talking to you and me. He's talking to our world today. I'm astounded that 2,500 years later, the words that Isaiah speaks here resonate in what I see going on in the world. See if you see it too. In verses 8 through 30, Isaiah gives six woes. Six woes. And what he's really saying is, Israel, if you keep going with plan B, this is what's coming to you. Or this is why it already has come to you. Let's take a glimpse at the six woes that Isaiah gives and what it says to us about the human plan. Verse 8. Woe to you who add house to house, field to field. Wait a minute. Doesn't that sound like a good business plan? I'm going to buy property. I'm going to turn it into rental. They'll pay my mortgage. I get my mortgage. I can buy two more pieces of property. Sounds like the shoemaker and the elves, right? I get a piece of leather. I get two shoes. Next week, I get four. The week after, I get eight. Isn't that a good plan? I bet you there's a few business plans out there somewhere. But notice what Isaiah says. You add house to house and field to field until there's no room for anyone else. And then he gives these devastating words, and he says, and you are alone. And you are alone. Notice, he goes on and he says, you make all these plans. You plant vineyards and expect grapes, and you plant, and he talks about the numbers. You plant grain, he says, and he gives these big kind of numbers and he puts it into Hebrew words. But it's basically, he says, you plant 60 bushels of grain and you get six back. How's that for a business plan? What do you see? You see, maybe you haven't caught it yet, so I'm going to be very clear. What is plan B? Plan B is the garden plan that says, I want to be on the throne of God. Humanity is going to be at the center of things. Humans will control the world. We have our own plan. We don't need God's plan. And God says, or Isaiah speaking says, here's your plan. You're going to dominate the world by your economic might. And what's the result? You will be alone. Now that resonated in my mind. Let me ask you this. What is America saying? What are the sociologists in America saying is the number one ill in American, number one social ill? I bet somebody would say racism. Sociologists say, What is it? Maybe I've said it here before, but it's powerful. It's loneliness. Do you get it? And if you go and do the studies, you'll find out that in nation after nation, one of the number one, if not the number one problem, is loneliness. Sweden, 50% of the old people, completely cut off from anyone else. The United States survey, 53% of adults asked, what's your number one problem? I don't have a meaningful conversation with an adult daily at any time. Isaiah says, you follow human plan B, and loneliness will result. Go on to verse 11. Isaiah says, woe to you who rise early and stay up late and drink away. Does that sound familiar to you? Chasing the parties? Chasing the good life? Being socially in? Having a good time. But notice what Isaiah has to say about plan B. He says, following in those verses 11 through 17, and your result? You're inflamed with your drink. And you have no regard for the deeds or the work of the Lord. And then he goes on and he says, you will have no understanding of life. You will hunger and thirst. There will be death and humiliation waiting for you. Isaiah says, plan B. Humans at the center of things. The result is disaster. Verse 18, woe. Woe to you who do what? Who draw sin. Who draw sin along with cords. Do you stop and puzzle over what the scripture says when you read it? Stop a moment and ask yourself, what is he saying? Who draws sin along with cords, wickedness with cart ropes. Isaiah is saying to us, human plan B. Maybe he's saying something like this. It will start with small sins. It will grow into monstrous sins you cannot shake free from. Human sin and selfish behavior living apart from God may begin to bind you with cords of spider webs, but will turn into steel cables that you can't get free from. Isaiah says, your human plan. Where is it taking you? I made my title, and then I read verse 19, and I was just like, oh, man. Look at verse 19. Look what he says. Woe to those who say, let God hurry. Let him hasten his work so we may see it. The plan of the Holy One of Israel, let it approach. Let it come into view so we may know it. Sounds good, right? They want to know God's plan. No. You see, they're still on plan B. God, let us know what you're up to. We'll decide whether we approve. Woe to you. Verse 20. Does this sound familiar? Are there echoes of what you're looking at around you? Woe to you who call evil good and good evil. Who call the dark light and the light dark, the bitter sweet and the sweet bitter. I have stood in this sanctuary and spoken to you before of those who call the killing of unborn babies good. Those who call choice of what gender you are good. Those who claim that two men being together is a marriage. And it is good. Woe to you, says Isaiah. In a wonderful book, I encourage you to read C.S. Lewis, The Abolition of Man. In this story, you see in the title, he says, we are abolishing humanity. We are destroying humanity, getting rid of humanity. And C.S. Lewis says, if I see a waterfall and I call it pretty or I call it sublime, what am I saying? C.S. Lewis says, there are those who say, you can't call a waterfall pretty. It doesn't matter if you call it pretty or sublime. That's only what you think inside of you. That's your emotion. There's no such thing as a good waterfall. Can you catch his point? C.S. Lewis says, you're mixing up words. You don't know the difference between evil and good. And you are unwilling to say there is a good in the world. It's all relative. Have you heard that before? It doesn't, whatever's good for you, that's good. Really? Then C.S. Lewis lets the other shoe drop and he asks you this question. Then what does it mean to be a good human being? Is there such a thing? And really, C.S. Lewis is pointing back to Isaiah, who says, you guys are getting confused. You don't know what evil and good are. You don't know where the light is, and you walk in the darkness. Much more could be said, and I encourage you to seek out what Lewis is saying here. But he's echoing what Isaiah says. If you are following plan B, and you're following the plan that says humanity will be the center of life, this is the result. Woe to you. And I hurry on. Verse 21, woe to you who are wise in your own eyes, clever in your own right. C.S. Lewis wrote another book. It's a fairy tale. It's called That Hideous Strength. It's an awful book. It's well written. I couldn't hardly finish. I didn't finish it. I didn't like it. Why? Because it talks about life where those who claim to know, I see. Therefore, we will live the way I see. That's in that story, Hideous Strength. And it reminded me of a little story in the Old Testament of a man named Gehazi. Remember him? The prophet refused to take Naaman's gold. And then it says this frightening line. It says, Gehazi thought to himself, I will gain. Gehazi was living by plan B. And I finish with Isaiah's last woe. We are in verse 22. And you might think, oh, this is kind of a silly thing. He's already kind of talked about it. In verse 22, he says, woe to you who are heroes at drink, champions at mixed drinks. But notice what he says. If you live by this method, by this plan, you will set the guilty free. You will give no justice to the innocent. You will reject the law of the Lord, and you will spurn the word of the Lord. Human plan? Man at the center of things? Do you think it's only Isaiah that's talking about it? Do you think that this is only ancient history, 2,500 years old? Do you believe that this is, where is this in the world? There was a movie that came out a couple years ago. It was an Asian movie. It was called The Wandering Earth. Did you hear about it? In the movie The Wandering Earth, human beings recognize that the world is headed for disaster. So what'd they do? They work for 10,000 years to turn the earth into a giant spaceship. And just as the sun is ready to die, they rocket the earth away from the sun to wander the universe with humanity piloting the ship. And you say, well, that's great fiction, isn't it? And I had some of my university students say, we've signed up to be some of the first scientists to begin working on that plan that 10,000-year plan. Plan B puts humanity at the center of things. And now let me hurry toward the end, and while we may not spend the most time here, I want to take you to point three. Point three is God's purpose behind plan B. Go back with me to verse 2. Go back with me to verse 2. You say, okay, so there is a plan, yeah. Oh, there's always a plan, okay, good. And God's in charge of the plan, good, good, good. What's the purpose behind the plan? I point you to another book. C.S. Lewis wrote a book called Mere Christianity. If you have not read it, if you have not read even a summary of it, I beg you, be educated. Learn some things. Talk amongst yourselves. Read Mere Christianity. But in that book, C.S. Lewis talks about a fleet of ships. We're on the ocean. Have you ever heard somebody say, what I do in my house, as long as I don't bother anybody else, it's okay? Ever heard that? Whatever I want to believe, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, it's okay, right? That's the world's plan. I get to do what I want to do. C.S. Lewis says this. That's called social morality. As long as my ship doesn't bump into your ship, we're all good. But what if you never take care of your ship's engine? What if you never fix your broken rudder? What if you never check the sails? What if you never grab the steering wheel and steer? What has to happen? Your ship will eventually bash into mine. So there's personal morality here at stake. It's not just what I get to do what I want. And then Lewis asks this question. Well, that's great. So now we've got ships under control and no ships bashing into each other. We're all good, right? No, he says, where are the ships going? Where are the ships going? And that's the question Isaiah answers in verse 2. Where are we going? What's our purpose? What's plan B or plan A all about? And Isaiah gives God's claim that I plant this vineyard so that I might have good fruit. Why? For my glory. If you didn't get enough homework, let me give you a little bit more. Go to your computer and look up good fruit, as the Bible calls it. And look at how many places God demands, God claims, God cherishes, God looks for, God prepares for, God promises good fruit to those who follow plan A. It is His delight. James chapter 3 is one of those places. In James chapter 3, it's doing exactly what Isaiah is doing in chapter 5. James says, if you follow plan B, humanity in the control of things, guess what will come? Bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. But he finishes in chapter 3 at verse 18 and he says, but if you follow wisdom, plan A, you will be pure, peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. What's the point of plan A? The glory of God alone. John Piper points it out. He says, you need another place to read. Read Isaiah 48, verses 9 through 11. In there, he says 6 times, it is all for my glory, all for my sake, all for my name. I give my glory to no one else. So, what's the purpose of the plan? God's glory. How does He accomplish that? I got another book. I only have one copy. You're going to have to make a sign-up list with Mark, because I'm going to give it to him. The title of the book is Sent. So I ask you, and I know I'm way over time, we're going to run out of time here, Mark. Here's my heart's delight for you. Catch the glory of Plan A. The glory of Plan A is that there is a God with a plan, and the plan was that His glory might be known by all the people of the world. And He is always drawing those people to Himself. Part of God's plan is that He uses people to bring others into the kingdom. And a third thing for you to remember, which comes out of this book, is this morning, again, He is inviting you and me to be part of that plan. How do you do that? You see, in verse 2 of Isaiah 5, God says, I'm looking for good fruit. I don't need more houses. I don't need more fields. I'm not all about anything this earth can offer. What I want you to do is to live in such a way that others will see me. The Hollimans wrote this book, and they said, well, here's some things for you to kind of think about. One, when was the last time a non-Christian came to your house and sat at your table? Two, who was the last person you told about Christ? Three, what stories have you prepared from your life that say, look what God has done for me? Make a list, 5 people you know right now that you would love for the Lord to bring into heaven. What are you doing about it? You see, Plan A is God's glory and His invitation that you and I be part of bringing people to faith in Him. May that be your delight this week to come. Amen.